Huddy.
I dropped the SC's phone into the cradle and almost trotted across to dispatch, where Shirley was still working hard, bending active troopers west.
Norco says it's chlorine liquid, I told her. That's a break. Chlorine's nasty, but it's not usually fatal.
Are you sure that's what it is? Shirley asked.
90%. It's what they have out that way. You see those trucks headed up to the water treatment plant all the time. Pass it on, starting with George S.
And what in the name of God's wrong with the dog? Mr. Dillon was at the back door, nose down to the base of the screen, going back and forth, almost bouncing back and forth, and whining way down in his throat. His ears were laid back. While I was watching, he bumped the screen with his muzzle hard enough to bell it out. He gave a kind of yelp, as if to say, "Man, that hurts."
"No idea," Shirley said in a voice that told me she had no time for Mr. Dillon.
Neither, strictly speaking, did I. Yet I looked at him a moment longer. I'd seen hunting dogs behave that way when they ran across the scent of something big in the woods nearby. A bear, maybe a timber wolf. But there hadn't been any wolves in the Short Hills since before Vietnam, and precious few bears. There was nothing beyond the screen but the parking lot. And Shed B, of course. I looked up at the clock over the kitchen door. It was 2:12 p.m. I couldn't remember ever having been in the barracks when the barracks was so empty.
"Unit 14, Unit 14, this is base, copy."
George came back to her, still coughing.
"Unit 14, it's chlorine 14. Norco West says it's pretty confident of that, chlorine liquid."
She looked up at me. I gave her a thumbs up.
"Irritating, but not... break, break!"
And cough, cough.
"Standing by, 14. Maybe it's chlorine, maybe it's not. Base, it's on fire, whatever it is, and there are big white clouds of it rolling this way. My 20 is at the end of the access road, the one by the soccer field. Those kids are coughing worse than me, and I see several people down, including one adult female. There are two school buses parked off to the side. I'm going to try to take those folks out in one. Over."
I took the mic from Shirley.
"George, this is Huddy. Norco says the fire's probably just fuel running on top of the chlorine. You ought to be safe moving the kids on foot. Over."
What came next was a classic George S. response, solid and stolid. Eventually, he got one of those above and beyond the call of duty citations for his day's work. From the governor, I think, and his picture was in the paper. His wife framed the citation and hung it on the wall of the rumpus room. I'm not sure George ever understood what the fuss was about. In his mind, he was just doing what seemed prudent and reasonable. If there was ever such a thing as a right man at the right place, it was George Stankowski that day at Poteenville Grammar School.
"Bus'd be better," he said. "Faster. This is 14. I'm 7.
Shortly, Shirley and I would forget all about Poteenville for a while. We had our own oats to roll. If you're curious, Trooper George Stankowski got into one of those buses he'd seen by busting a folding door with a rock. He started the 40-passenger Bluebird with a spare key he found taped to the back of the driver's sun visor, and eventually packed 24 coughing, weeping, red-eyed children and two teachers inside. Many of the children were still clutching the misshapen pots and blots and ceramic ashtrays they'd made that afternoon. Three of the kids were unconscious, one from an allergic reaction to chlorine fumes, the other two simply fainting victims, OD'd on terror and excitement. One of the crafts teachers, Rosalind Nevers, was in more serious straits. George saw her on the sidewalk, lying on her side, gasping and semi-conscious, digging at her swelled throat with weakening fingers. Her eyes bulged from their sockets like the yolks of poached eggs. "That's my mommy," one of the little girls said. Tears were welling up steadily from her huge brown eyes,
but she never lost hold of that clay vase she was holding, or tilted it so the black-eyed Susan she'd put in fell out. She has the asthma. George was kneeling beside the woman by then, with her head back over his forearm to keep her airway open as wide as possible. Her hair hung down to the concrete. "Does she take something for her asthma, honey, when it's bad like this?"
"In her pocket," the little girl with the vase said. "Is my mommy gonna die?"
"Nah," George said. He got the Flovin inhaler out of Mrs. Never's pocket and shot a good blast down her throat. She gasped, shivered, and sat up. George carried her onto the bus in his arms, walking behind the coughing, crying children. He plopped Rosalind in a seat next to her daughter and then slipped behind the steering wheel, put the bus into gear, and bumped it across the soccer field, past his cruiser and onto the access road. By the time he nosed the Bluebird back onto County Road 46, the kids were singing, "Row, row, row your boat." And that's how Trooper George Stankowski became an authentic hero, while a few of us left behind were just trying to hold on to our sanity and our lives.